through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Great to have all of you with us on a Tuesday, beautiful Tuesday here in the Pacific Northwest. Mike Blowers will be coming up at 1 o'clock today. It'll be good to talk to him, get him to break down some of these Mariner players. Kind of an ugly loss last night, but we'll skirt around that the best we can. Mike Salk also coming up at 12:30, and we're gonna actually start to examine some things surrounding training camp. Guys we're looking forward to watching, guys that we're interested in, rooting for, etc. But, man, yesterday, it almost sounded to me, guys, like Pete Carroll was thrilled to actually be doing a press conference or some version of it. Like, he was there. He sounded way more excited than anybody in the media did. Like, he was fired up. And you got to think, the main reason for that is because he's got a player now in Jamal Adams that he can talk about and brag about. And you think about the reasons for that, other than the fact that he's a great player. Well, he's like Pete Carroll. Jamal Adams and the way he plays is a mirror image of everything that Pete Carroll talks about. This is like the most Pete Carroll player ever. Let's hear this cut from yesterday, cut one on Adams' character.
One of the things, you know, you could look at, you could see him be all fiery and interpret that like he's being selfish or like he's being, you know, overly outgoing or whatever. Come on. You know, this guy loves what he does and he cares so much that the passion just explodes out of him at times, which is exactly what you've seen in players that we've had in our program for years. So to have a chance to add that to our team, forget all the playmaking stuff. It's that element of mentality that I'd love to add so that Bobby gets to play with a guy like that and then Jay Reed gets to play with a guy like that and Bruce, and they'll all feed off of each other because we all love to be that way. That's the way we love about this game, is cutting it loose and letting it go and getting to that primal mentality that this game allows.
Loves what he does. Passion. Talking about rubbing off on the other players. He didn't use this word in that cut, guys, but whenever I think of, like, the most Pete Carroll word, like his favorite word, it's compete. Compete, competition, some variation on that. Like, that's Pete's word, and that's what he's talking about there with Jamal Adams. So it kind of dawned on me, this question. Is this team at its best when they have players who reflect Pete Carroll? And is that what they've been missing? Remember last year we kept talking, oh, they're missing a viciousness. They're missing a competitiveness. They're missing that fire, something that they've had before and that they don't have right now. Those are Pete Carroll traits. So now that they've got that player, and you heard Pete talk about that, those qualities rubbing off on other players, is this when they're going to be at their best, when they've got that kind of player, Jake?
I love hearing quotes like this from Pete Carroll. And Stacy brought up an excellent point about the two sides of Pete Carroll, and I'll let her explain that. But, Tom, Jamal Adams brings out the best side and the best nature of the kind of defense that Pete Carroll wants. Bobby Wagner has been a tremendous leader, and Bobby Wagner is an alpha competitor. He is a guy that sets the stage and sets the tempo, but he's also not a outwardly demonstrative player. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't talk trash during a game. Doesn't mean he doesn't mix it up in practice and on game day. But we all know what we're talking about here. Bobby Wagner is not the in-your-face, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to beat you and then I'm going to go do it type of player that you had with Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. And Cam did it quietly, but his actions spoke louder than his words. Jamal Adams is a player that's going to tell you he's going to do something, and then he's going to go do it. And those are the types of guys with that much swagger, that much confidence, that much attitude. The Seahawks defense needs that presence. And when you talk about attitude, Jamal Adams brings that. I love the three words that he talks about, or the three things that he mentioned about Jamal Adams: loves, care, and passion. all three of those things implement into attitude, implement into viciousness out on the field. And when you talk about competitiveness, let's rewind the clock here a year ago. Okay. We sat there out in the practice field at the VMAC, and gosh, I miss that, and I hope we could get back to that at some point here where we can watch these guys practice and prepare for the season. But there was a lack of attitude, viciousness, and competitiveness there, right? I remember sitting next to Brock Huard and going, what are we looking at right now? This is not the same defense that we're accustomed to seeing. And the four and the three names that he mentioned, Bobby Wagner, Jaron Reed, Bruce Irvin, along with Jamal Adams, those four guys are guys that the Seahawks are counting on to be that alpha leader, alpha competitor, and that's what they need, guys. And I'm excited that Pete Carroll is this fired up about Jamal Adams.
You know, my theory, as an aside, was that there are two parts of Pete Carroll, and those are represented by now some of the players he has on his own team. Yes, there's like the showy, outgoing competitor, kind of sarcastic, trash talking, like the DB, right? Like Pete Carroll at his core feels like just a defensive backs guy. And the personality that Jamal Adams brings, assertive, outgoing, advocates for himself and for his team. A big part of that is Pete Carroll. Then there's another part to him that I think he's had. So I think that the team has been lacking, not in that you don't see that in some guys, but not the way that it was, right? You don't have like a Richard Sherman anymore. The other part of him, though, is that kind of PR savvy, obsessed with winning, protect the team at all costs, know when to not say something. That's more of like a Russell Wilson. I'm going to pick Bobby Wagner sometimes being in both camps. Like, I think he's really confident, but I think that he also exemplifies that part of Pete Carroll. But it feels like when they were at their best, they had kind of both kinds of guys, and they've been lacking that a little bit. But my main point about this, that this all made me think of, is that it's really two conversations. One, I agree with you guys. Adams brings a personality that the Seahawks haven't had a ton of, and they miss dearly. When we think of the Seahawks at their best, they had guys like Jamal Adams. The second, though, is that Carroll's willingness to accept that and his desire for that personality, I think, highlights the difference between those two coaches, between Pete Carroll and Adam Gase, and highlights why the Seahawks have been so successful under Carroll.
It's easy to understand when you hear Pete talk about Jamal Adams that way. And he even referenced the New York media there. He was like, in fact, Curtis, can you pull that cut up again, and then we'll stop it after he references the media. Just play that again.
One of the things, you know, you could look at, you could see him be all fiery and interpret that like he's being selfish or like he's being, you know, overly outgoing or whatever. Come on. You know, this guy loves what he does, and he cares so much that the passion just explodes out of him at times, which is exactly what you've seen in players that we've had in our program for years. So to have a chance to add that to our team, forget all the playmaking stuff. It's
okay.
That
element. The selfishness comes from what the New York media, that's how they characterized him on his way out. We had Bob Wischusen on with us one day. He kind of
did not hold back.
Right. But here's the thing. You can understand when you watch Adam Gase, just his personality. I'm not saying he's not a good football coach or that he won't have any success. But sometimes guys are just a bad fit. Huh? You don't think he's a good
head coach?
Well, he strikes me as a Matt Patricia kind of guy. You know, you have to fit into my system. And technically, Carroll wants you to buy in, but he also leaves room for guys to be themselves. And I think he likes the challenge of a guy that's a different kind of personality. I don't know that Adam Gase seems like a guy that has that patience.
I don't think that Jamal Adams appreciates the stoicism, the aloofness, the standoffishness, the sort of just, you know, all right, hum-de-dum sort of approach to coaching. Let the assistant coaches talk to the players while I'm off doing X, Y, and Z. I think he likes the Pete Carroll hands-on, let's go, boys, rah-rah, win one for the Gipper. I think that's what he's all about. I think he mirrors that perfectly. When you talked about the PR savvy thing, that's more Russell Wilson's territory, right? He and Pete are like two peas in a pod. In that way, they have this manner of speaking very down the middle. They can say a million things without saying anything. When it comes to attitude and the way these guys carry themselves, Jamal Adams is that side of Pete Carroll. And I love the way he talks about, you know, rubbing off on the other players. Because even as much as Bobby Wagner is the leader, he's not the tell me if you agree or disagree. He's not the emotional leader, or at least he shouldn't be. He's miscast in that role, I think. I think Jamal Adams fulfills that role much better than a Bobby Wagner.
No, I understand what you're saying. Bobby is, to me, the same thing as Russell Wilson. He is the guy who is stable. He's the guy that everybody should be leaning on and depending on, especially in the moments of crunch time. How's Bobby reacting? How's Bobby looking? That's how he is. When you talk about attitude, when you talk about toughness, when you talk about all those things, Bobby exemplifies those. But you need, on defense, you just got to have some guys that are willing to put it out there. That's why I love the addition of Bruce Irvin, because Bruce Irvin isn't afraid to mix it up. He's one of those guys that is going to fight with somebody if they cross the wrong side of the 50-yard line in pregame rituals, right? Like, it's those things that I think that you have to have on defense. You have to have guys that are not afraid to mix it up. And Jamal Adams, to me, is the perfect combination between that. He's not going to be a guy that's like Richard Sherman, who some guys love and some guys hate. I think Jamal Adams is kind of right in there in the middle between, you know, being a guy who is willing to be vocal and stand out, but also be, you know, perfectly in line with what Pete Carroll, Bobby Wagner, and everybody else are preaching. So I think that when you talk about practice, it all starts in practice. You're going to have Jamal Adams setting the tone along with Bobby Wagner, along with Bruce, along with Jay Reid. These guys that are going to be flying around and talking trash and bringing the energy and the juice and the competitive nature to practice, which they sorely missed back in 2019. It wasn't even the same team or the same energy, the same juice last year. I'm excited to see them get ramped that back up and see this defense become a lot closer together from a mentality standpoint. I think that will translate onto the field.
Also, side note, I think there's a bit of a misconception that Wagner isn't a vocal leader. I think he's not necessarily exceptionally vocal with media, but when you're there watching practices, which we won't get to do as much this year really because of COVID, but he is almost too far on the field yelling at guys on the defense and encouraging them and trying to get involved and telling them what to do. Like, he's a very involved person during training camp and practices when you actually watch him on the sideline.
Yes.
Is there a difference, real quick before we get to three questions, is there a difference between the vocal leader and the emotional leader? I mean, am I splitting hairs when I say that?
I understand what you're saying, and I can't find the right word for you, Tom, because Bobby is the vocal and emotional leader. He is both of those guys. Like, he is that wrapped up into one in terms of what he brings to this team. But I think Jamal Adams, how about he brings more of an edge to this team? I think that's what he can provide along with Bruce Irvin, that they bring more of an edge to this defense overall, and that those guys can feed off one another.
That to me is the emotional part of it. Like, the vocal guy is the captain out there, right? Which is what Bobby Wagner is, telling everybody what to do and making sure everybody's in line. With emotion, sure, but like Richard Sherman was the emotional guy to me.
Yeah.
In the day, the guy who's just out there, like, who probably wants to win more than anybody. Like, every play means more to him than the other 10 guys on the defense. That's just how I look at it. I'm sure everybody will disagree. All right, right now, three questions. Let's go.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
We told you yesterday that the Eagles head coach Doug Peterson has COVID, so he's out for a little bit. But he's coaching on remote, so he's involved in all these activities. He's not just like hanging out at his house. Do you guys think that as far as COVID goes, that Peterson is setting a bad example for his team by coaching and being involved instead of getting proper rest, Stacey?
I mean, no, I think that's just the vibe of anyone in football. Like, you're just constantly grinding it out, constantly pushing yourself over the edge. Like, I get in theory why you would want to be more careful, but I think that's why sports is going to continue to struggle, is that you're so used to, as a player, pushing yourself through an injury or pushing yourself to work out when you probably shouldn't be and when you probably should be resting. It's probably kind of the same for coaches. So, like, medically, maybe not the best example, but I feel like this is in line with how football players, including coaches, many of whom were players or have been around football forever, feel about it.
You know, I guess I'm confused by the question, because isn't he asymptomatic? I mean, I think that he is quarantining. He is doing everything from home. He's not at the facility. And so I think if you're feeling well enough, then, you know, physically, then yeah, go ahead and go about your day, your work as much as possible while quarantining and staying healthy. So if you can work doing it from remote, then great. As much as you're physically able to, I don't see the problem.
Yeah, it'd be a far worse example if he wasn't quarantined. Like, if you were like, oh, I feel fine. Like, what? Okay, great. But, like, don't go around other people.
Jake, you taking umbrage with my question? You got a problem?
Yeah, I got a major problem, Tom. Let's go.
You want to step outside?
Meet me in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'm ready
minutes.
To step outside. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It is. Perfect day for a duel. Next.
Great.
Number two.
We talked about Nick Rolovich yesterday and his position in the hashtag We Are United. I'm not going to call it an issue. We'll call it a movement by the Pac-12 players. And the boycott that might ensue. The interaction between he and his player Cassidy Woods was kind of up in the air yesterday. We didn't know whether or not Cassidy Woods, was the Coug wide receiver, was going to opt out because of COVID, or he was going to join the We Are United movement and boycott the season. And Rolovich was just sort of talking his player through, saying, "Hey, if you're opt out because of COVID, cool. If it's this other thing, then that might cause you a problem as far as scholarship, things like that." And yesterday, Rolovich elaborated on that. He said, "I wanted to clarify with Cassidy that his decision was based on health and safety and reaffirm our policy related to COVID-19 and the insurance or the assurance of his scholarship. Without knowing the concerns of the group, I regret my words cautioning Cassidy have become construed as opposition." So he was never opposed to the group itself. He was just telling his player, "Hey, here's the lay of the land. If you opt out because of this, it's okay. If it's because of this other thing, that might cause you problems." So is Rolovich now in the clear, Jake?
Yeah, I believe so. And when you have your star linebacker, come to the defense of you on your team in Jahad Woods, I'm going to take that over Cassidy Woods any day, right? Cassidy Woods was a player who knows what he would turn into be over the next couple of years for them. But you're talking about the star linebacker of the team right now coming out and defending, saying in his tweet, "People trying to force a negative narrative on Rolo is really wild to me. To any up-and-coming recruiting class, don't listen to the media or anyone outside of this team. They don't know," and then there's an expletive involved in that. Now, it's interesting because the player that had a problem with Rolo was someone from within the team, but I think you can see how Jahad Woods took that with what Cassidy Woods did and how he went about it. So, to me, yes, I think the case is closed and it's time to move forward and move on.
I don't know if it's totally closed. I think there's worse things that he could have said. I mean, it sounded like he was hesitant to make a specific stance on something. And in part, that's what kind of bothered people, because it didn't seem like he was supportive. But if he's saying, "Look, I didn't know the specifics of it. I'm speaking on behalf of school policy, and that you would not be able to keep your scholarship potentially if you opted out for reasons outside of that." We don't know that that's not what he was saying. I understand why it's a very sensitive subject, because there are people today in years past that are very openly like against Black Lives Matter or against some of the things that the We Are United open letter was advocating for. And like So I know why that would be irksome to hear someone not support it. But I think that Rolo's so fresh to this job that I'm like, I think he should get maybe a longer leash with this, a little more flexibility than with someone like Mike Leach.
Ultimately, none of this stuff is even up to the coach, right? Whether or not the player loses his scholarship. It comes down to school policy,
it can,
doesn't it?
It can be. No, the AD and the head coach work together in this. The AD
so
ultimately has the say.
Okay.
Yeah, so the head coach definitely has influence. But I think this is possible, that Rolovich and the head coaches across the Pac-12 probably did know of the group. Also probably didn't know exactly what the group was going to lay out there. So maybe they thought this was COVID-related or just strictly financial-related. Maybe they didn't know that there were the other elements involved with this. I think that is possible. And the other thing that is possible is, yeah, I don't think your head coach in any program is going to be all that pumped to have one of your players opt out of a season to just opt out. Right? In protest of something. Even if they agree with your stance, I think that you're not going to see too many coaches say, yeah, I'm going to honor this agreement until this gets settled. I think that that's going to be very few and far between.
Next.
Number three.
Okay. The Mariners. When a team like the Oakland Athletics has an 8-run inning in the fifth, and you guys are watching, do you think to yourself, well, there's still a chance with so many innings left, or do you think it's over, I'm shutting this thing off, I'm going to do something else to occupy my mind space, Stacey?
If it was 8-1, and before it got higher, if they were to like get guys out and the Mariners came up and like got a homer or something, I'd be like, there's a chance.
Right.
The comeback starts now. No, I think that I'm expecting losses like this season, and I'm not surprised it came from someone in the bullpen. It's actually a shame that some of those runs got tacked onto Sheffield's night, which before the start of that inning was really, really good. Didn't allow a single hit from, what was it, the first or the second to the fifth. So I think a really good outing from him up until then. So that's a kind of disappointing ending. And I agree with Shannon Dreyer, maybe a misrepresentation on his own stat line. So not surprised it came from mistakes in the bullpen. No one was expecting that to be great this year. Also not shocked that maybe the offense couldn't kick into high gear. We're expecting that with a young team. So I don't know what you were expecting if you weren't expecting some losses like this, especially this year for the Mariners. It was going to happen, and it'll probably happen again.
For me, I have a really hard time initially. Maybe I'll come back to it and see, check back in and see if they're able to come back or mount a comeback. But to sit there and watch that unfold in one inning is really difficult to watch, and then to sit there throughout all of it. But I have to say this. I am so thrilled to have Mariners baseball back. I am so thrilled to be able to watch these guys and talk about it. But yes, moments like last night, it's tough. It's very tough.
You know, we got four guys in this lineup who are hitting under 130 and one guy who's hitting under 100.
I could tell you who they are.
Go ahead.
Hitting under 130. Marmolejos.
Yeah.
Smith.
One.
Vogelback.
Three.
White.
Four. Ding, ding, ding. You win
nailed
nothing.
Nailed it.
Got it.
All right, we're going to talk to Mike Salk about this team next. I'm curious as to whether or not there's anybody on this team he's done with. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Joining us now, Mike Salk, in person, in Woo-hoo. Studio. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hey. You know what? I was going to start with our own open, but I'm going to go ahead and get the bad news out of the way. Justice Sheffield, for the most part, a good game last night. How'd you feel about
it? Well, it fell apart on him late.
But was it his fault?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's up to him to pitch a little deeper into the game, but I'm not as worried about that at this time of the season. I mean, look, you're trying to judge Justice Sheffield based on what he's going to become. Yes, the results are obviously going to matter a little bit, but I'm judging him based on what he's going to become. And without a full spring training to warm up and everything, I don't need him going deep into games. If he can throw four good innings like he did last night, hopefully he's able to take something from that, build off the confidence of it, and continue. The fastball was sharp. The slider was at times unhittable. And he even mixed in some of the changeup a little bit. There were a lot of bad swings. Was it Piscotty especially, had a couple of swings and even a couple of takes where he looked like he had zero idea where the ball was going to go. So, yeah, it got away from him. And certainly having this bullpen of death come in afterwards and just, you know, throw gas on every imaginable fire. I mean, they got a lot of guys on this bullpen that don't belong in the major leagues in any capacity. And that's okay. That's sort of what rebuilding is like. I was actually really encouraged by what I saw from Sheffield last night.
Yeah, and that was the one thing that I was watching there, Salk, is at the beginning of the game, you see Sheffield, you see him more in command, and you've seen this rotation starting to, you know, take a turn in terms of having a much better turnaround. Do you expect to see this group continue to improve with each and every single start?
Well, no. I mean, I think what I expect is to see more inconsistency. I think we'll see some moments where they improve, right? You'll see some, and there'll be a game this year where Sheffield pitches the way he did for the first four innings, deeper into the game. He's got that kind of talent. He's 24 years old, and he wants to go out there and just sling that slider, and I don't blame him. So you will see a game where he goes six innings, allows just a couple of hits, and maybe only a run or no runs or whatever. Unfortunately, you're also going to see the opposite. You'll see a full game where he looks like he did in the fifth inning yesterday, where it just kind of gets away from him and the command disappears, because that's kind of what being a 24-year-old with some talent is. And you're going to see that from the Mariners, a lot of inconsistency, and it doesn't help when you don't have a shutdown reliever to come in and bail you out. Because if you look at Justice Sheffield's line last night, and it turns out it was, you know, 4 2/3, and he gives up a run or two, you're saying, okay, I wish he could have made it through the fifth or the sixth. He got out a little early, but okay, it's early in the season, and he got the job done. Instead, Shaw comes in and basically doesn't get a guy out. I don't know who's – hey, Curtis, if you have to take an at-bat right now, do you want to take your at-bat against Shaw or Grotz?
Oh, man. I'm going
Shaw
because it'll likely be a walk.
Curtis, you said he was away from an all-hitter.
He was, yeah. opposite of a no-hitter.
I think Grotz might be worse right now than Shaw, and that's saying something because Shaw can't –
They're both – god awful.
Neither one of those guys are major league relievers right now, and they might be nice guys. And at least Brian Shaw's been around a long time, so like he's done it. They got too many guys like that in the bullpen, and that's fine. They're not trying to build a great bullpen right now. They're trying to build a lot of youth, a lot of excitement. And if you watch these games, Kyle Lewis looks good. J.P. Crawford looks good. I thought that Justice Sheffield looked good. You like what you're seeing. Evan White obviously still struggling with the bat, but he's carrying himself in some of the right ways. You know, the guys that you're counting on to be part of the future have looked good. The guys that you're not have not. Pretty simple.
So Saul, you talk about the inconsistency. Well, through that inconsistency, how do we tell the progress that is being made with some of these pitchers that you're counting on to be major staples for you of the future?
Yeah, over time, you want some of the lousy starts to drop off, and you just want to see more consistency in the better ones. And I hate to just keep using that word consistency, but that's what it's going to be for these talented kids. How often can they, you know, you play golf, right, Jake? The difference between you and a good golfer is how consistent you are. Cause I bet you're perfectly capable of hitting that 7-iron with a nice little draw, you know, 155, 160 yards, put it right in the green. You'll do that a couple of times around, right? You're good for that. You're probably like me. Yes. You're probably also good for duffing that 7-iron and hitting it about 7 yards and then screaming and maybe like Tom saying how awful you are and smashing your club against the ground or maybe your golf cart. The difference is over time you get more and more consistent with it and fewer duffs and more times are you hitting the green. And I think that's what you're looking for out of your young pitchers as well.
We opened up the show today with a conversation that I really, really loved. It was inspired by a question from Tom, which was, is Jamal Adams the most Pete Carroll player on this roster right now?
Who was the most Pete Carroll player so far? Have you gone back to kind of figure out who?
Well, I think that there's two sides to Pete Carroll. I think that there's the side that is Russell Wilson, very PR savvy, protect the team, never say anything bad, always, always optimistic. Like, won't even talk about a broken leg in a bad way.
Right.
Obsessed with competition, obsessed with winning. That they are the same in that way. They might have disagreements about maybe how an offense would be run or whatever, but they are so similar there. But then you have the part of Pete Carroll that I think is, in his heart, a DB. And there's just a personality type that mm-hmm. maybe only exists with a DB. Mm-hmm. That was Richard Sherman to me.
Oh, interesting. See, in some ways, I think Earl Thomas is, or Cam maybe, is sort of the ultimate.
Earl.
No?
No. On the field, maybe.
Some of the weirdness. Yeah, I think I'd probably go with Cam. But you're right, some of the outspoken nature of Richard Sherman or Doug Baldwin even. I mean, I think there is that element that is similar. So maybe this combines all of it. You're talking about a guy who plays a safety position, who can do so much. And Pete's had so many great safeties over the years. I mean, obviously starting at USC with Troy Polamalu, but then eventually, you know, you start talking about Cam and Earl. I mean, that's been a really big part of what Pete wants to do. So he plays the right position. He plays the game the way Pete wants, hard hitting, punishes you in the secondary, et cetera. And then you add in some of his outspoken nature and his leadership. I'd have a hard time arguing with you that he isn't as much like Pete Carroll wants as anybody. I mean, it's one of the reasons I like this deal. I know they gave up a lot, but the player they got fits what they're trying to do, and I think you can't just put a price on that.
So Pete Carroll, in this cut that Stacey's referring to, talks about how an addition of Jamal Adams is going to help players like Bobby Wagner, Jaron Reed, and Bruce Irvin. And he wasn't even talking about on the field. He was talking about from a mentality standpoint. From your experience seeing this defense and covering this defense at its very best, what does that mentality that Jamal Adams brings, how can it help those other guys that he mentioned get the most out of them?
Yeah, it's funny. Brock and I kind of started to walk down this road on the podcast, which will come out tonight at brockandsalkpodcast.com. So, you know, the last couple of years, it sure seems like they've made a concerted effort to get Bobby Wagner in front of the media, right? He sort of became the leader, and Pete put him in a lot of those positions before they even moved on from some of the other leaders in that defense. It seemed like they were grooming him for the role. And then last year, Bobby really became the de facto guy. I mean, he was the captain. He was the guy doing press conferences, et cetera. And he handles that beautifully. Bobby's such
He's good at it.
He is.
He's
such
sarcastic.
He is. I don't know if it's his natural role, though. And if it had been, I think he probably would have jumped into it a lot earlier. He's great at it. This isn't a shot at Bobby or anything close to it. I have as much respect for Bobby Wagner as any player I've covered. I really like him. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that that's his natural inclination. And I'm at least willing to wonder whether or not some of that took away from his play on the field last year, if he might be somebody who is best off letting that stuff go to somebody else and just concentrating and going out playing middle linebacker and knocking dudes' heads off. So I don't know if Jamal Adams takes over some of that role so that Bobby can share it with another veteran. I think there probably is some value in that. So, you know, I think that combined with the edge that has been missing since some of those guys departed, and specifically Cam Chancellor, if he's able to bring some of that both on and off the field, I 100% agree with Pete. My mind goes to the exact same place, that it'll help those guys both on and off the field.
Before we wrap this up, what else can we look forward to with the Brock and Sock
podcast? Oh, Jeff Schwartz, who I really like. Jeff Schwartz, really interesting dude. Brock and I got back to one of our all-time longest debates. Brock
is
and
it
I,
paying student-athletes?
Of course it is. Yes. How could it not be after
it
all
would
this?
Only, the only other thing would be something really random, like candy corn. Well, it's going to be something I'm not expecting.
Well, it's something that has nothing to do with sports,
exactly.
Basically. And his opinion on candy corn is insane.
What is it?
He likes candy corns. And
get off my show.
He eats them in order to have weird dreams at night.
Okay, that's weird.
He says if he has candy corn right before bed, he'll have weird dreams.
Candy corn's delicious. It's not the. I'm not saying it's the best candy.
Gross.
I'm just saying it's
so nasty.
Jake, you like candy
it's
corn?
Candle wax.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It is. It's literal sugar.
It is.
It's fine.
Jake doesn't
need to be part of this because he has bad opinions on candy.
Candy corn. Candy corn's one of those things that I would never touch. Ugh. But if I ever ate it. For some reason,
you're
I can't
not mad
stop
at
eating.
It.
It feels
See?
Like
it's
eating
ridiculous.
One of those Christmas tree shops.
It's the CSI of candies. Ugh. It's you don't click the remote and choose CSI.
No, I do not.
But when it's on, you watch 10 episodes.
False. Immediately turn it off. Exactly what
wrong.
I would do with candy corn.
Okay. So we
so
can
we got some good
to
debate on the Pac-12 stuff and some Seahawks questions, some Mariners, and there's a lot of good stuff. It's
All
worth
right.
your time.
Thanks, Mike.
See
Talk to you tomorrow. All right. It is Seahawks training camp. It doesn't quite feel like it under COVID, but we're going to get into a very exciting conversation about the position groups we're most looking forward to watching and guys we're pulling for next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Jake, we're going to talk about training camp here, but before I get into it, I have to say I'm not surprised at all to see that the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, if you want to join that conversation, has blown up over whether or not candy corn is the worst candy or maybe one of the best. And I'm not surprised at all to see that debate. It's a very polarizing candy.
It is. It is a very controversial candy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have mixed feelings about, you know, candy corn. I will not. It is never my preference of choice of candy. I will never seek out candy corn during Halloween. But if I ever have it, I can't stop eating it. And it's like I don't even know what I'm doing. I just keep force feeding myself candy corn. It's like it's addicting.
I hate myself.
It's like that and Cheez-Its and what other thing out there?
Anything
is just like once you
salty.
Pringles, once you
chips
once
of
you
any
start,
kind.
You can't stop. I mean. That's what candy corn is the equivalent to me.
Speaking of starting and not being able to stop, we talked about choosing for this training camp segment we were going to do. Seahawks training camp kicks off this week. Players aren't going to be able to actually practice on the field really in a way we're used to seeing until probably like mid-August, the 14th or so. Very slow start to camp. But we wanted to choose the players we're most rooting for, most excited to see, and I could not stop picking. I've tried to narrow it down, but I'm going to let you go first, Jake.
Okay. For me, the two guys that I'm pulling for, and I think looking at it in a different context of maybe not guys on the roster or the on the roster bubble, but guys that I think are going to be huge to this team in terms of the impact, and that's the two new offensive weapons that this team added over the offseason, and that's Philip Dorsett and Greg Olsen. I'm really pulling for those guys to be the best versions of themselves because I believe Philip Dorsett, being a former first-round talent, being a guy that I played with at Miami, knowing that he's got 4.2 speed at the 40-yard dash, watching it with my own eyes in person at his pro day, this guy has elite speed. He has special stuff, and I think that he is a guy that could really flourish in this offense, this deep passing attack with one of the best deep ball thrower in the league in Russell Wilson. And then Greg Olsen, I really think can add a totally different dynamic to this offense if this offense is willing to open up and be willing to use Greg Olsen's strengths and abilities because this guy understands zones. He's one of the smartest players I've ever had the chance to be around and talk ball with. He just gets it. He gets it. So I'm hoping that they utilize those two in a very productive way because if they do so, Stacy, I really believe on top of everything else that they have, that they can be a top five to top three offense in this league.
Oh, wow. It's not a huge jump. They were already, I think, a top 10 by the end of the season, really on either side of 10 there. For a while there, they were a top five. But a top three means I think that they've like taken a different approach to the way that they're handling their offense. I love these two picks for you. And I'm going to go backwards, starting with Greg Olsen. I love the pick of Greg Olsen. I think that the more you've talked to Tom and I about him, the more excited the season has seemed. It's very clear that he's going to be very focused in on the team. This isn't kind of like a last stop. Let's get it all out of my system. This is I still want to get to a Super Bowl. Like, let's get the ball moving here. Very intentional kind of guy. I like the Philip Dorsett choice, not only because you spent time with him, so it's nice to have some of that insight, including according to DK Metcalf, he's really, really good at hoops, Jake. Maybe so good that he could carry a teammate without that teammate having to
easy,
do much at all.
Easy. But don't listen to DK. DK lies. Philip and I were equally carrying each other. So we were a good team, pairing,
Jake.
And DK's just salty that
right.
Him and Russ couldn't hang.
But I do think that he's been generally glossed over among the free agency pickups. Maybe it's because the offense was already pretty solid, specifically DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, that people were like, okay, cool, you got a wide receiver three. But I feel like we really haven't talked about Dorsett a lot at all.
We really haven't. And I think that you're absolutely right. And it's partly because he's never been a guy that has never really been a guy that in terms of being a first-round pick, having the stats to back it up, I think that those are things that you look at as a guy that, okay, is he a player that just was overrated as a first-rounder, or has he just not been in the right system? And I think right. It is the latter. So I'm excited about that part. So, Stacey, what do you got for us?
So
what's the player that you're pulling for?
I went mostly defensive. The guy I'm pulling for, and this is for a lot of reasons, mostly I want a first-round pick to work out, but secondly, he was injured, is LJ Collier. He started the preseason by pretty much knocking out most of his preseason because of an ankle injury that sounded so serious, according to general manager John Schneider, that they actually thought they might lose him for the season. I remember that day, John Schneider, who normally isn't too involved on the field with players during training camp, understandably so, it's not really his job, walked out there to talk to him after he was hurt. He had to get carted off the field. At the time, we thought, this is really serious. What if this is an ACL? You know, what's going on here? So I'm very curious to see what he looks like with a defensive line that has a couple new additions, a new couple young players. I'm going to include Toms for this one. He mentioned Daryl Taylor on the other end of that, competing at the Leo spot with LJ Collier and Taylor being at kind of opposite ends of the D-line. I'm really excited to see what they do with those two defensive end spots. A lot of our attention is on the Leo spot. Not only is that the guy that usually gets more sacks, but it's usually just like the faster guy. But they've been missing that kind of Michael Bennett role on this defensive line, and that's what LJ Collier could potentially bring to it. So really excited to see him. I'm also going to add in Jordan Brooks. I really like KJ Wright. This isn't me advocating for Brooks to replace Wright. I'm just very excited for this linebacker group and what it can potentially be. And Jordan Brooks was personally my favorite pick that they had. I'm starting defense with that. Did you have a defensive guy?
Well, I believe that, Stacey, when you're talking about LJ and you're talking about and LJ Collier, to me, I fully agree with you on that end, that he is a guy that they have to have. Being a former first-round pick, being a guy that brings such versatility, they need him to step up and actually be a contributor to this defensive line, or else it puts your depth, it puts your group as a whole in a compromised position. So they need him to absolutely be a better player than what he was last year, and you give him that pass because he was a rookie. I love Jordan Brooks. I think it's going to be one of those things that everybody should be keeping their eye on, that particular battle between Jordan Brooks and KJ Wright. Obviously, KJ has all the experience, had a tremendous year last year, but if Jordan Brooks is the player that the Seahawks were hyping him up to be, then I fully believe that he's got the potential to take this defense to the next level, and also could save you some major dollars in your cap space. So I think he's another important player to this. And for me, Stacey, to answer your question, though, one other defensive player that I would highlight is a guy that I think has been forgotten about and is one of the highest contracts on this team, is Jaron Reed. I mean, this team paid him this offseason big time money, $11.5 million. They need $11.5 million of production out of Jaron Reed. They need big time 2018 Jaron Reed version of production for this defensive line to really amend themselves for what happened last year. Without Jaron Reed being a part of the picture and being a dominant player, this is going to be a group that struggles yet again in the run game and yet again in pass rush. And so he's going to be a key factor in all of it.
All right, and we'll obviously jump back into the Seahawks conversation with four down territory coming up at 1:15. But first, we'll talk Mariners and MLB with Mike Blowers. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.